right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
All right, everyone out there. Welcome to season two of Be the Right Club Today. Been excited about bringing this back. We've been slow to bring it back. We've gotten a lot of Twitter requests as to when Be the Right Club Today is coming back, but we've gone through some changes here at the Academy. We've got a whole new team here, and we've got great guests lined up with a Q&A episode from y'all. We hope that through our Twitter and Instagram, y'all send in all of your questions. We're not going to be able to answer them all, obviously, but we will be able to answer a bunch of them. We'll pick the best ones that we think make a difference in everybody and in the game we love, and we'll try to answer them to the best of our ability. We love talking golf here on Be the Right Club Today. It's a game we all love, and we all want to be better. Every day somebody walks into this academy wanting to be better. And we love to help them in that journey. And let me emphasize, it is a journey. If you want to play great golf, you must show patience. Nothing happens overnight. Everybody wants an instant fix in golf, and there is no such thing. So if someone tells you that there is, look for someone else. Anyway, got two new teammates here at the Hal Sutton Academy, Jamie Frazier and Jamie Marshall. Both have extensive experience in the game of golf and in teaching and in playing. And they're young. They care. They've got good hearts. And that's what you need in your golf game and in your journey, your personal journey in the game of golf, is people helping you get better because they care. And so we're going to introduce each one. Jamie Frazier's first. He's the director of the Academy, and he's from Scotland, so I'm going to let him take over right now and tell you all about himself.
Well, thanks very much, Hal. My name's Jamie Frazier. Grew up in Oban, Scotland, a little bit east of here. It's an honor to be joining you in the podcast. You know, I listened to all of season one. I loved every episode and the stories you bring to people and ways in which people can learn to get better at the game that we all love. But yeah, a little bit about me, introduce myself. As I said, I grew up in Oban, Scotland, a small little town on the west coast of Scotland. I went to college in Dornoch, and for those people that have played golf in Scotland and have been to Dornoch, you won't believe there's a college there because it's a tiny little village, but it's got one of the best golf courses in the world. So that's where I really learned to, at that college, really get better, practice better, and start, I joined the golf team there in my second and third year. I was captain of the golf team my third year, so that's where I really grew my golf game and got a lot better. After that, I started working at a club called the Renaissance Club, or Renaissance, as they say in America, as an assistant professional there. Started teaching a little at that club, worked kind of bag drop at the start, started at the bottom, and I spent a good few years there. Through that club, I had the opportunity to come and work in Houston. I worked at a club called Houston Oaks, just 40 minutes outside of Houston here, and I was an assistant professional there. While I was doing that, I was traveling back and forward between Houston and Scotland. I would do the winters in Houston when the weather in Scotland was really miserable, and then I would do the summers back in Scotland when the weather in Houston was really miserable. I've still not quite adjusted to the 100 degree temperatures here in the summer. It's a little bit too much for me, but that's great being an indoor place now. You don't have to be outside all summer. But yeah, so I've been here full time in Houston pretty much for the last kind of 5-6 years. Had a great a great opportunity the last few years to try and do some mini tour stuff and be a bit more, play a bit more competitive golf. But yeah, meanwhile, while I was doing that, I was working at Houston Oaks and still kind of doing teaching there and doing club pro stuff. And yeah, now I find myself here at the academy. It's a great great place to be at. We've got a lot of great technology here that can really help help us, you know, learn to not fix people quicker, but help give better information quicker. We get quick feedback through all the technology we have here, and that can really help people get better at this game. But yeah,
that's great, Jamie. You know, one of the things that's going to hurt here is you're not going to be able to work on your tan quite as much inside here. But we're really thankful to have you here at the Academy. And I think I've told you many times how grateful I am to have you here. The organization that you brought to the Academy is incredible, and I really appreciate that. We're going to move over here to Jamie Marshall now and tell them about yourself, Jamie.
Yeah, thank you, Al, and thank you, Jamie, too. I'm really excited to be here with both of you guys. I'm originally am from Canada, Kitchener-Waterloo, Ontario. My family moved to Colorado when I was younger. So I grew up just outside of Denver in a town called Castle Rock.
And that's home to Castle Pines, right?
Home to Castle Pines, that's right. I know you played there many times. I ended up going to play college golf at the University of Arkansas. I was there from 07 to 11. And once I graduated from the University of Arkansas, I went right into playing professionally. I played for almost 9 years and really lived the journey.
Yeah, exactly.
I played every mini tour you could think of in the States and tried to go to Asia to play anywhere I could get status. I went and just chased it. Played on the APT tour here in the States mostly. Ended up getting my tour card on PGA Tour Canada, which was really cool because it was a developmental tour that the PGA Tour started to take control of, and they really made it a great place to play for guys coming up trying to make it. So my last 3 years, that's where I was, and I really enjoyed it. And being in my homeland, you know?
Yeah.
So I got to go back to Canada and see a lot of people that I hadn't seen in a long time, which was also great. But really, really excited to be here at the Academy. Now that I've stopped playing, I really wanted to get into being an instructor and give back to, you know, people who want to get better, just like I got given great instruction from the guys I worked with. And, you know, especially in the junior golf world, I mean, unfortunately, there's a lot of bad info out there. But, you know, I want to be able to teach juniors and teach anybody, you know, just give them good information, get better incrementally, you know, and do it what I believe is the right way. All my knowledge and stuff obviously comes from player background because I was a player, just like you were, Hal, and so you were too, Jamie. Most every guy that I worked with on my game was a player as well, but I really liked that. I really liked the player mindset in a coach. I wanted information from guys that had been there and tried it.
In other words, somebody, don't tell me about heaven unless you've been to heaven.
Right, that's right. Right, so that's really where all I get my, and I being around great players, you know, being at Arkansas, I played with 4, 5, 6 guys now that have been on the PGA Tour and have won out there. I played it in the SEC with a bunch of guys that have won on the PGA Tour. So I've been around, I've seen what it takes for guys to be great, and, you know, and I was really close to knocking on the door as well. So, you know, that's really where I pull all my knowledge from, is just being a great player, being around great players, being around guys who were great players and now coaches. And that's where I really learned the most. So, yeah.
Well, let's talk about philosophies in the golf swing. First of all, one of the things that I want to talk about is that golf swing is just a piece of a whole. So when we're talking about your journey in becoming a better golfer, the golf swing is just a piece of the whole. There are people, and here's something that I want to say. There are people out there that are, I mean, money is the driver of everything. Let's just get that out there right now. And there are people that talk about their piece of the puzzle as if it's the whole. And I will never allow that to be talked about here in the Hal Sutton Academy and on Be the Right Club Today podcast, because I definitely understand the whole. I'm 65 years old in April, and trust me, I started playing golf when I was 11 years old, and I never got off the bus of trying to get better. And I understand that a good golf swing, I've seen this many times, a good golf swing without all the other parts of the puzzle, you sit here and wonder why he can't make it. And there's a number of reasons why he can't make it. And then I've seen somebody that absolutely doesn't have a good golf swing, and yet they make it. And that's the mystery of the game that we all love. But here today, we're going to talk about golf swing because I want the world to know what Jamie Frazier and Jamie Marshall think about the golf swing. I think everybody out there knows that I believe, Hal Sutton believes, that the body is the engine and the arms play a passive role. The minute that changes, I think we have manipulation going on. Now, that's Hal Sutton's belief. Take it over, Jamie Frazier.
Well, I agree with so much you talked about there. I think, if people's bodies aren't moving correctly, there's a huge amount of manipulation and compensation happening. The arms can get in funky positions, and then you rely hugely on timing. Now, there's a lot of great players out there that have relied on timing and have been really successful, but, you know, for your amateur player, your mid to high handicapper, you know, for them, they're not playing as much. It's gonna be harder for them to manage their timing. So, getting that body moving correctly, and like you said, Hal, getting the arms playing a more passive role. Me and Jamie, we've talked a lot about this. Is you can change where someone's arms are moving just through some simple body drills, getting the body moving correctly, and all of a sudden the arms are in a much better position, without the player even really thinking about the arms. And you know, when people get really conscious about the smaller muscles in the swing, I think it's hard to be repeatable. And with intention, when they're playing their buddies in a high stakes match or something coming down the last, when tension creeps in, you want that body moving correctly. You don't want that wrist That's taking over right. or the arms taking over. I don't know what you think about that, Jamie.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you get nervous and you have an arm swing, it's not going to work. I mean, I agree with both what you guys say. Going back to my roots, that's all I've ever was taught. Body, you know, use your body to swing the golf club, to control the face, all of that. So that's very much what I believe in too. Teaching people to get the club in certain positions can be very, very difficult because it's a very hard thing for people to feel. Some people might not be able to physically get the club there. So I believe it's just easier to teach people to move their body a little more efficiently to help them get the club where in a better position and to control the club face through impact, because that's really where what you have to do. Mm-hmm. You know, if that chest isn't moving, that club can be all over the place, right?
I totally agree with you, Jamie, both Jamies. You know, when we talk about body, we're not just talking about core in that. No. Yeah. You know, we're talking about how you hold on to the ground. First, your feet are on the ground. Your ankles are a big part of how your body moves. Mm-hmm. And if you've got weak ankles, your body is going to move differently. And here's the next thing that everybody needs to be thinking about out there is if your body's not moving in a correct position, your arms are going to try to make up for it. And that's where manipulation takes place. We seek balance first in the golf swing. And if your balance is off, your arms are going to do something different so you can somehow stay on top of your feet.
They're counterbalancing.
They're counterbalancing. Yeah. That's exactly right. And, you know, that's where guidance is really helpful, because someone, we can't see ourselves. I mean, the advantages that we have today in video that we did not have in my day. I mean, I'm literally doing it all by feel, because we had 8mm film, and I can tell you, you couldn't see nearly what you can see right now. So I had to ask myself the correct questions about where was my balance? What did I feel? And I had to come up with something in something that happened in less than a second and a half. Yeah. So you have to go back and you have to think, what was going on in that second and a half? And that's where all the new technology has really helped.
Yeah.
Don't y'all agree?
Yeah, because feel is very rarely what real, right? That's where video comes in huge.
Feel in the golf swing.
Right.
We're going to talk in the future about feel of the game, which is very important. That is another piece of the whole that we were talking mm-hmm. about earlier. So, you know, in the last few days, weeks, whatever, tell us some of the things you've been seeing mostly in the pupils that y'all been teaching.
Lately, a lot of sliders. People who will take the club pack back pretty decently, get it in a decent position, but they just really shift or slide or sway really hard onto the left side. There's no real turn or rotation. So their transition is just this real big slide left, which can get the club way out. I mean, you could do all kinds of things from there.
Right.
But when they slide or sway way out in front of the ball, their body actually has to stop, because they're so far ahead, they need the time for their arms and their hands to catch up to hit the golf ball.
Right.
And then they lose the club face.
Right. So that's great that you bring that up, Jamie, because that all happens a lot to some of the better players because of what they've heard and what they've read about how tour players shift hard from the top of their golf swing. Their weight goes to their left side. So what do we do in the game of golf? We overdo, which kills the rest of the body. Like you said, it stops so everything can catch up. And, man, that is a tough way to play golf, because when your body stops and your arms are going, if you're a right-handed player, four left is what you're going to hear.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you release the club. And if you don't release the club, way right.
Four right.
Four right. And, I mean, I hope everybody out there is listening to this, because there's a process in this journey of a golf swing to get better. And you can't skip any of these processes. You can't jump forward. You know, if you take it one step at a time. In the beginning, I talked about patience in the game and patience in the swing. Don't skip any of the processes if you really want to be good. What do you think, Jamie Frazier?
Two things that I've noticed the most is how people turn into their backswing. Mm-hmm. A lot of people may just spin their hips back, thinking they've got a great turn, but they're actually not loading properly and not creating that that ability to have a powerful move on the way down. So they're not really loading up properly into the right side. And another thing I notice a lot is when people are really eager to hit a lot of balls quickly.
Right.
When you give them some advice. I remember you sent out a tweet maybe a couple months ago now, talking about if you look back at your career, how you wouldn't hit nearly as many balls, and you'd way more practice swings and movement. I see that every day in here. We have a lot of our members that come in and practice in the back, and the bays in the back there. You just see them, you know, ball after ball after ball, and I would encourage them maybe to have three or four or even five kind of practice swings, movement drills before they hit a ball. Not just hitting ball after ball, because I feel for players, when you start hitting ball after ball after ball, you're really going to quickly go back to what's comfortable, and maybe old habits and not quite moving correctly.
Yeah.
That's the two biggest things I've seen.
I love that, Jamie, because once again, we're going back to when you said nobody loads their right side properly. They all want a big turn. They've heard that. They've read that. They've seen that on YouTube and everything else. And what I see happening is they actually get a big turn. They shift their butt back to the right, but they actually load the left side. Mm-hmm. Because they get tilted to the left because they never get loaded to the right. If I had one really good thing that happened in my golf swing when I was growing up, Jimmy Ballard showed me how to load my right side. It was just load my right hip, not load the upper body. And if you get into your right hip, then you have power. If you don't get into your right hip, you don't have power. Now, a lot of people confused him. People loaded their whole body, and they didn't load their right hip. They loaded their whole right side, which people saw that as a sway. But they just didn't understand what Jimmy Ballard was talking about. And, you know, and I totally agree about the use practice swings, because the result with a practice swing is to create a good golf swing and a good feel. The result when you're hitting a golf ball is to create a good result with the golf ball, and you're going to rely on what you already know or have to create a result. And, you know, that's not moving forward. That's stagnant or moving backwards, basically. Mm-hmm. And I hope everybody hears that out there, because, you know, I mean, I don't get another chance in the game. And I've got a lot of knowledge that I know if I had this opportunity over again, I could build my golf game the way I wanted to build it. Mm-hmm. I know the inner fortitude that I had to try to win a golf tournament. So, I mean, through 30 years, I understood the whole. It took me 30 years to understand the whole. I had pieces, and I kept trying to put the pieces together. And, you know, by the time, you know, not bringing this up because of any other reason other than it's pertinent to this point. By the time I had to play Tiger at TPC, I had the whole put together. And I knew that I could do what I was fixing to do, and I had confidence that I could. No matter what anybody else said, they couldn't tear my confidence down. I knew I could do it. That's the whole. See, if you only have pieces of it, then when someone starts telling you about your weakness or whatever else, that makes you question it in your own mind. And, you know, because you know it's there. You know, you haven't been totally honest with yourself. And that's where coaches come in, you know. And I want to say this, you know, we liken ourselves more than teachers of the golf swing as full-line coaches.
Right.
I'm going to turn this over to both Jamies for y'all to talk about here. But, I mean, do we understand the swing? Yes, we understand the swing. But we also understand how to coach somebody from one point to the next point. So
I think that has a lot to do with us three all being players.
Right.
Our player background, right? So we all know the mentality that it took to play the game at a high level, right?
Totally agree with that.
And it's like going back to our original point. It's not just the golf swing.
Right.
The golf swing is a very small piece of golf. You got to have the mental game. You got to have a short game. You got to be able to get up and down when you're not playing that well. You know, you got to get the ball in the hole. And a lot of times it can be mind over matter, right?
Absolutely.
Just like you were saying when you're at TPC, your confidence was through the roof, right?
Right.
So no matter what anybody told you, you were going to go out there and perform your best. I've experienced that too in competition. It's like, if you don't have all those pieces, if you don't have your mind right, you're almost doomed from the start. You know, it's as soon as you hit one bad shot, now your mind's racing, and then you're lost out there. That's where coaching comes in. Most people that a lot of people I played with in pro golf even, I could tell when they hit a bad shot, they didn't know why. And then you could see in their physical appearance that they're like, oh no. And then they were done. The really great players that I was around, they never had that. they'd hit some bad shots, but then they'd click, something would click right back in, and they'd be right back on track again. That's the difference. Where, like, they had the whole piece. They know their golf swing. They were confident. They had a great short game. They had all that stuff, and you know, errant shots or one bad hole didn't really throw them off.
I think a great coach can give the player some tools to use. So when that player's in the moment on the course and they're maybe seeing something they don't like to see, they've got little fixes they can throw in there.
Yeah.
And a coach can help a player identify those, whether it's slightly different setups or something, just to control that ball flight. That was a huge thing for me. I started playing a lot better when I understood a little more, when I got some better coaching to help me understand where bad shots were coming from and what my tendencies were. Mm-hmm. And then it's a lot, you can fix that in the moment on the course a little bit quicker if you understand your tendencies.
Yeah, like if you were hitting it left, then your coach says, hey, Jamie, this is why you hit it left, especially under pressure.
Yeah.
Totally. You can be like, oh, okay, I hit a couple left, this is what I'm going to do.
Yeah. Whereas before that, I've had that a lot of times in the course where you see that bad shot and you're like, uh-oh, right. I'm in trouble here.
Which, yeah.
If I'm going to hit that all day, I'm going to shoot
millions. But it is amazing how many people, even in professional golf,
yeah.
I mean, you can see them. I don't know what it is. You could always see the guys that didn't know and the guys that did. Mm-hmm.
So it's changing because of data.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
People are readily know the mm-hmm. reasons why, more so than from my generation, mm-hmm. basically. I've got to throw this in. This is a little offbeat here, but I never have to introduce Jamie Fraser again because all y'all can hear his accent on there, I know. But anyway, and I'm so happy to have that Scottish accent in the Be the Right Club Today podcast. Something I want to bring up at this point. Y'all have heard me say this many, many times. Everybody has a weakness in the game. And if you work hard on your weakness, your strengths will suffer. Mm-hmm. The strengths need required practice time in order to be a strength. So don't forget them. But here's what I want to say about weaknesses. If you want to play the PGA Tour, the weakest part of a PGA Tour player's game is probably better than the club champion at wherever you're at. The weakest part of their game is better than the club champion's game. That's how good they are. And, you know, they're constantly trying to get better. And one of the things that I also want to bring up is creating correct expectations on where you're at in your journey, on what you should be expecting when you hit the golf course. Because most of the time, a lot of the golfers that we see in here and we work with in here, they have much higher expectations than actually they're capable of producing at the time. Mm-hmm. And what that does is that causes them to come back and say, man, I'm disappointed in my performance. They get down, their confidence gets shot. They feel like they're further backwards in their journey. If we can help create correct expectations yeah. in this, then we're doing a good job as a coach at helping move them along at the correct pace. What do y'all think about that?
Yeah, we were talking about that the other day, actually, because we've seen quite a few people in here we've been teaching recently. They'll hit one, and it'll, you know, hook to the left or something, and they'll be very disappointed with that shot. But then if you show them, hey, that was only 25 feet to the left of your target.
Right.
With a 7-iron, that's not a bad shot.
Yeah.
Like, your expectations aren't where they should be.
I can't tell you how many 25-footers I had with a 7-iron when I was playing, right. and actually won. You know, but I had correct expectations.
Right.
I knew that that's not going to kill me.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, managing misses is really important in the game of golf.
Yeah.
You know, and that's part of the feel that I was talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. You know, not just feel in the golf swing, but feel in the game. You know, knowing when to press on the accelerator, knowing mm-hmm. when to hit the brake. I think everybody out there knows what I'm talking about when I say that. If you played any sort of tournament golf at all, you know what I'm talking about. You know, any little thing that's a mishap causes everybody to hit the brake and say, I don't want to do that anymore. Any great thing causes, oh, man, I'm fearless now. I can hit the accelerator. Managing that process is a big part of becoming a really good player.
When you were playing, when you won at Sawgrass, when you were playing Tiger, down the stretch there. That whole week when you were playing, did you have a lot of moments like that, easing off, easing on, or were you so confident that you were sticking to your game plan? How did that work that week when you were?
Well, I stuck to my game plan all week. You know, it was really funny. I wasn't flighting my irons the way I wanted to flight them. So I spent the first 2 days that I was there, I didn't even play a practice round. And, you know, I was trying to put shafts in my clubs where I could flight my irons the way I wanted to. I knew the firmness of the greens. I played nine holes when I first got there. I could feel what the firmness of the greens were. I played TPC no telling how many times. I didn't need to get familiar with the golf course. I already knew the golf course. So what I was trying to do was make sure I was flighting my irons the way I wanted to flight them. Mm-hmm. And I finally got a good set of shafts in my clubs that was flighting the ball the way I wanted to. And I finally went over to 17. I said, there's only one shot that I need to hit to feel before I actually get on the tee that week. And that was the tee shot on 17. I wanted to just see it, feel it. And I went out there and I hit two balls, hit the middle of the green both times, and I walked back in. And I made a vow to myself, I'm sticking to my game plan no matter what. This is a golf course that requires point A to point B to point C. It was not a power golf course, so I knew that power was not going to defeat me. Mm-hmm. I had enough power to play that golf course. So, you know, even when I knew it was Tiger and I that were going to come down the stretch, you know, it's okay. I know he's more powerful than I am, but he can't use that power against me on the golf course. Mm-hmm. I mean, and, you know, I heard about this later, he told Butch Harmon, he said, no way Hal Sutton can beat me. Because he doesn't have the short game to beat me in the end. And then after we finished, he said, well, I had no idea how I was going to hit all the greens. I missed one green that day, and I probably hit the greatest shot of my life on number eight out of the bunker, you know. And but anyway, you know, feeling the game, the will to win, all those things are pieces of the whole, which we're going to talk about on Be the Right Club Today podcast. For this season too, we're going to spend a lot of time on that, both between the three of us and others that we bring onto the podcast. Y'all hang on a minute. We'll be right back. We're going to talk about LIV next.
All right, welcome back. Part two of our season two, episode one, Be the Right Club Today podcast here. As Hal mentioned before the break there, we're going to start talking about LIV Golf. It's a huge, huge news, certainly in 2022. I believe they have 14 events in their schedule for 23 versus the 8 they had in 2022. So Hal, we'll turn it over to you. What are your overarching thoughts with how the LIV Golf scene is playing out?
Well, first of all, the last 10 days or so, we saw the Masters say that the LIV golfers could play at Augusta. I think that's really good that they allowed that to happen, and here's the reason why. What's happened with LIV starting up is particular fan bases don't get to see their players play as much. You know, the Dustin Johnson fans out there, the Brooks Koepka fans, the Phil Mickelson fans, the Bryson DeChambeau fans, we could go on down the list. There's not as much opportunity to see them play. And at this point, you know, what that's done is that's divided everybody. Where are my energies in terms of watching golf going to be? You know, can I even watch them play? They're struggling to get some sort of sponsorship from one of the networks of TV to even put them on. And then that takes me, okay, I've got to regress and go back to my days of playing. You know, when I went out there, if I finished in the top 10, I made a five-digit check. Think about that. Last place in today's world is far greater than that. And so when I went out there, and although money was worth more at that time, you know, a dollar was worth more, I played because of the competition, not because of money. I mean, I was a true competitor. I wanted to learn how to compete. Raymond Floyd took me under his wing and he said, Hal, you know how to play somewhat, but you don't know how to manage PGA Tour life and PGA Tour competition. So he started teaching me. And he spent the first 6 months that I was out there doing it. The second 6 months is when I really took off because of him coaching me, which is what we've been talking about in our process of coaching good players about how to play good golf. It's not just a golf swing. So today's world in LIV, what this has all created is it took the focus from competition to money. And if you don't believe what I'm about to tell you, then all I got to do is say these guys sold out for money and they tried to disguise it in many other ways, saying it was great for the game across the world and all that sort of stuff. Well, when you don't have a cut and you only play 54 holes, let me tell y'all something. Trying to make the cut in a major championship and then having the internal fortitude to play 72 holes to hoist the trophy at the end of the day, y'all have no idea the sleepless nights and the worry and all the things have to come together from years past in order for that to happen. They just sidestepped all of that with the LIV. And I could go back and tell y'all, let me tell y'all, Phil Mickelson and Greg Norman have had it out for everybody for a long time. In 1999, Phil Mickelson, when we were at Medina, stood up in front of a players' meeting at the Ryder Cup and said, the PGA of America owes us a great deal of money, and I'm not even going to tell you how much he asked for, but he wanted a lot because he said, without us, you have nothing. And I'm telling you, let me tell you how I felt about that. I played golf on the Ryder Cup because I was playing for Ed Peck, who was the Class A pro at Northwood Country Club, who had died already, but he represented the 27,000 PGA Tour professionals that teach all of y'all how to get better. And I was playing for him that week. And, you know, I didn't need money to go there. I was going to gain because I had endorsement deals in my contracts. If I made the Ryder Cup team, they had to pay me. And, you know, I could talk all day long about this. You know, I believe in order for all of us as fans to love the game the way we've always loved the game, there has to be competition first, and money is a byproduct of the competition. It's not money first, and by the way, we have a competition going on. So now you've heard what I think. Y'all tell me what you think.
Jamie, what's your thoughts with LIV for next year? Or touching somewhat how
talked about there? Yeah, I mean, LIV's been so crazy. I really have more questions than I do comments. I mean, and I'm kind of, I find myself like on both sides of it, right? But I don't know, like, competition is so tough these days. I don't know if how you'd agree with some of these guys. I think are jumping ship because maybe they don't see their games lasting very long. Like a Matthew Wolf, he came out like on fire, and then he had an injury. He's still young, but he's like, man, you know, it's tough out there. I don't know how long. He even said this in his interview when he went to LIV. He's like, I don't know how long my body's gonna hold up. You know, he's got that funky motion, really torques his body, swings hard. You know, did he just leave because he's like, I'm going to cash in, and I don't know how long I'm going to be able to play at this level. Would you agree that some guys did that for that because the competition's so tough and maybe they don't really have that true competitor in them?
Well, I would agree with that totally, and I would even take it past Matthew Wolf. I mean, I'd take it Phil Mickelson. He's got no game to beat the rest of the guys on the PGA Tour. And you're going to give me all this money at the end of my life.
Yeah.
I'm going.
The older guys, I kind of understood it.
Yeah.
It's well, like Lee Westwood,
Ian Poulter, all those guys.
Louis.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, hey, you know what? I've had my time in the spotlight, and I've probably played my best golf. And they're going to give me all this money at my age.
Well, yeah. I would also agree with that with Bryson DeChambeau. He's never figured out who he's going to be.
Exactly.
I mean, he doesn't know if he's a long drive champion or if he's a PGA Tour superstar.
Yeah.
And, I mean, let me just tell you, if I'm Bryson DeChambeau's coach, I'm going to say, you got to make a choice, son. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't be both of these people. Pick one and let's be that. And I can tell you what I'd pick. I'd have picked being the best PGA Tour player because the long drive champion wins, what, $250,000, and they win $2.5 million or whatever for winning a tournament. I don't know what it is anymore. It's so much.
But now it's kind of changed everything now because with Augusta, they're going to let the LIV players play, obviously. So I would assume all the other major tournaments will do the same. So a lot of those guys probably like, well, now I'm not really losing out on what I want to do. Because a guy like Dustin Johnson, he wants to play the majors, right?
Well, that's true, but they want to continue to build a fan base that's watching them all the time. They want to continue to feel pressure so that they can handle the pressure in the majors. Mm-hmm. Just playing four events a year that where you really feel that. I mean, those guys are making so much money just to show up and to live, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, feeling the pressure is part of the whole that I keep talking about.
Big difference.
There's a big difference in that. And, you know, my dad, when I first, before I ever turned pro, wanted me to stay an amateur. And he said, I want you to try to, let's not attack Jack Nicklaus's records. Let's go after Bobby Jones's records. Well, I quickly, after about half a year of not being able to play enough events and watching my game deteriorate. See, when I was a college player, I'm playing 14 college tournaments. I'm playing all the tournaments in the summertime that I can play. So I'm playing 25 tournaments a year. So that's a pretty extensive schedule like that. But all of a sudden, you don't have those 14 college tournaments to play in anymore to test your skills, to test your emotions under pressure. You're not schooled enough in order to handle that. And I'm afraid that's what's going to happen
with the live guys. They're not really playing in the fire.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah, anymore.
Yeah. What do you think, Jamie?
I like that Augusta are allowing those players to play. I think that's great for the fans to see all the best players in the world. And I think that's important for majors going forward for their own credibility is to collect the best players in the world no matter what tour they play from. What's going to be tricky is because we talked about DJ there and he's already got exemptions into these majors, but these young players that are moving over to LIV, are they ever going to get that opportunity? Because they're not getting ranking points right now. Right. So for those guys, it's like, how long is it before they're going to have the chance to play in those majors? Are they going to be able to? It all depends on the ranking point situation. But I think, like you said, if Augusta have taken that stance, then the rest of the majors will probably follow suit. But from a young guy's perspective, I don't know. I mean, Tiger touched on that a little bit when he was before the PNC. I think it was the PNC. In his pre-tournament press conference, he was talking about the same thoughts as you. It's about being competitive, right? And if you're, I know like Tiger looked up to Jack's record. That was like his kind of motivation. That's what he wanted to do. He wanted to try and beat Jack's record. It wasn't about money. Money is the byproduct of that. But are these young guys now, are they going to have, do they not really care about like the records or the legacy? Maybe they just want the money. Like, I don't know. I don't know what they're thinking. But I don't know for you, Hal, when you were an amateur leading up to becoming pro, did you have any players on tour you tried to emulate or records you wanted to hit?
I didn't. The main thing that I was trying, I emulated everything that Jack Nicklaus did, but it was clear to me that I didn't. Maybe I wouldn't even allow myself to look at this in the process. Everybody tried to label me the next Nicklaus when I first came out because I was fortunate to be Rookie of the Year, and then the very next year I was Player of the Year, which I almost look back on that was a curse because things happened quickly and easily, and all of a sudden the expectations became so high for me that I quickly became a failure in everybody else's mind. Like the next year in 84, I think I finished second three or four times and finished in the top 25 like 15 times and finished seventh on the money list or something like that. And everybody said I was a failure. And I mean, that really, you know, I'm failing them because I'm not winning other major championships like they expected me to do. I was hitting it 25 feet with a 7-iron, you know, like we brought that up before. You know, that's because the world doesn't know how hard this is. They just want what they want. And from a fan's perspective, when we're talking about LIV like this, it's all split and divided right now. And let me tell you, I mean, I think I can close this conversation with this. I was taught by my parents to never bite the hand off that fed me. And let me tell you something, the PGA Tour was good to Hal Sutton and Hal Sutton's family. And I never felt like I underachieved or under-earned or anything else. And if I did, it was my own fault, not somebody else's fault for holding me back. And I mean, today I have a really nice pension from the PGA Tour because I was able to extend my career long term. And, you know, when Greg Norman says that, you know, earning possibilities need to be greater than they are, he said that from a long time ago, and let me share this with y'all. Y'all wouldn't even know who Greg Norman was if it wasn't for the PGA Tour. You wouldn't even know who Phil Mickelson was if it wasn't for the PGA Tour. Did I say that loud enough and emphasize that enough? You know, the truth is much wants more. And that's where this whole thing has gone. And let me tell you something that really I'd love to see the game get back to. I'd love to see the game get back to, I love the guy because of the way he played, not because of what he said or what he posted on social media. If we could get back to that, that's feeling the game at the core of the game. We'll be back with you in a second.
Okay, we're back with closing comments of Season 2, Episode 1 here in Be The Right Club Today podcast. There's some great comments there from you, Hal, about LIV Golf. Some really interesting takeaways there. I think a lot of the listeners will enjoy. To finish off here, I just wanted to talk a little bit about what's going on at the Academy. We're very excited. Both Jamie's and I are really honoured to have this opportunity, Hal, to have us here. And we can't wait this year to help people with their games and help people get a little better at that game they all love. Going forward, we're really looking forward to some more guests we're going to have on this season. We have our weekly newsletter here at the Academy, just keeping everyone up to date with what's going on. Hit up the website for that if you're interested in signing up for that. Comes out every Monday evening. We got our junior clinics every Saturday morning from 9 a.m. till 10 a.m. Again, you can find our details on the website if you have some kids that are interested in the game of golf, or maybe they're already a pretty good player and want some further development. Myself and Jamie take those clinics every Saturday morning. Keep an eye on our Instagram. Follow us, Hal Sutton Golf on Instagram and the YouTube. We're looking forward to posting a little bit more content. Hand over to Jamie to talk about the clubs that are coming up.
Yeah, thanks, Jamie. Really excited for the new year. I really like people to come check us out. Great place here. Got some great membership deals. We do have some of the major club companies coming out with some new equipment early January, February. Callaway's got all their new Woods and driver coming out, as well as Ping and Mizuno. So come check us out for a club fitting. Jamie and I have hit both the Callaway and the Ping equipment. It's very good. We're very excited about stocking it here. And I'm just excited to get the new year rolling and make this place as great as it can be. And continue our podcast. We're going to be talking a lot about coaching, obviously, and what's going on in the world of golf. So how what are you most excited about for the new year?
Well, I'm excited about y'all being on board here. I'm going to start with that. I really am. That not only are they great guys, but they're great teachers, and they care. As far as I'm concerned, I'm shutting down some. Like I said, I'm going to be 65 years old. I'm teaching one day a week, and that's why I'm so excited about them, because they're taking over, basically. And The other thing is the podcast. I'm so excited about getting that started back up because I think we really help people get better with the game with this. Maybe we change the way they think. Maybe we change the way they attack. And one of the other things that I'm really excited about is I'm building a golf course west of Houston. It's called the Darmore Club, and we're using the templates from C.B. McDonald and Seth Rayner. And there's nothing in Texas like this. And this is a great piece of property. It's a great piece of land, and it's a great opportunity for me to put what I know about golf in the ground. And, you know, I have this one thing that I think about every time I try to do something like this and build a golf course. If my son, if I died and I had already built the golf course, will the golf course teach my son everything about golf, about how to hit different golf shots? To me, if y'all start evaluating a golf course, if it teaches you everything, if it makes you hit every club in the bag, it makes you hit all sorts of shots, then that golf course is a good golf course. Anyway, y'all hit us up. Watch us on Instagram. Watch us on Twitter. Shoot your questions to us. The big part of season two is answering y'all's questions, both through our guest and through our own knowledge. Thanks for being a fan of Being the Right Club Today podcast. We're back for season two. We'll be better than ever. See you next week.